So I was thinking what we should study next, but and then I was contemplating a little bit this morning that because Dr. Samaloka has been shown a lot of teachings, and I will discuss with him that we can have some discussion, you know, whether we how we apply the teachings. It's important after we learn how we apply it and what is our understanding of it. That's important. So I was today. I just thinking that we can do a deep dharma discussion. You know, share your understanding and bring out some points that we can discuss things together. And one thing I would like to share before we do the discussion is like this. Last Sunday, I went into the one of the Jewish church, and we have panel discussions. There's about 8 people was invited: lawyers, teachers, Catholic priests, and Jewish. What do you call father?
Rabbi.
Rabbi, yeah, he's a rabbi, Jewish rabbi, and I'm only Buddhist monks there. And we were discussing about, and they invited us to share about the concept of God, and it's interesting. People offer different views on the panelists. But I say that I don't come here to share the concept of God, because there is many concepts of God already. We have been fighting many fights on the concept of God. I say that God is the reality of living, so we have to live in the reality. How can we discuss about concept of God? It's difficult. That's why to grasp. The more we discuss, the more we bring into the concept. We didn't fall into the trap concepts, and we fight. And if we don't live it, without us, how can God exist? Because we are the reality, and we are the continuation of God. And they agree. They not agree, but they nod their head. I know. Because the more we was discuss about concept of God, then we go into the external to look for something. That's most, to look for something outside. We not have a chance to return to ourselves. And the more we go further outside, the more we away from God. Away from God. It's the same thing that's, and then it's, and I contemplate about that and say, it's the same thing between what Dr. Samaloka was talking about, between what he's talking about. Something that biology, right?
Mm-hmm.
And spiritual, right? Spirituality and biology. And the separation between the body and the mind. Is that right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's the more we go outside and we separate our body from our mind. So that's relating me to that thought, how we are searching for realities. We call God here is something, the truth, but we name it differently. You can say it's God, we might say it's Buddha, you know? In Buddhism we call him Buddha, but in Jewish they call it God, Jesus, or something else. But the common thing is we are searching for reality, for truth. And there is a Jewish rabbi, he gave an example on a story on the elephant. Does any one of you know the story of the elephant?
Mm-mm.
No, they're searching for truth, and so they bring an elephant to the blind man. Every like six blind people and one people is not blind. So and then the blind people they couldn't see. Just the same thing as we search for the truth. So one man they grab on the leg of chung of the elephant, say, oh, it's like something, it's like a wood stick. And the other man grab on the ear of the elephant and says, it's a fence. And the other man grab on the body of, you know, the nose of the elephant. And this is different things here. So So when we come into church for truth, we experience different part here, and we say it's differently. And then once we grab onto that, and we the blind one blind man, he grabbed the ear, and he touched the ear, and he says it's like a fence, and he says that the tooth of the elephant. That's how the elephant looked like. But the one man, he didn't blind, so he see everything. He say the elephant is not the ear, the elephant is not the trunks, the elephant is not the leg, but the whole he can see is the whole elephant. So same thing that when we study is the truth of the Dharma, we experience partial of the two, and we hold on to that, and then we for us it's the truth, because we experience that part of it, right? And it's true for us, but not for maybe for someone else. It's different, experience different. So even in the Dharma, even in Buddhism, that's why we have many school. Coming to be after the Buddha, 400 years after the Buddha passing away, many Buddhist schools are rising, you know, it's growing. So each school, they have different truth there. But if one school, they said that this is the truth of the Buddha teachings, then it might not be. Yeah. But they experience that and they say that. So the same thing, we come into the truth, maybe God or something that we experience differently. And sometimes we experience ourselves, and sometimes we experience based on what we read. So it's like conception. So today I just would like to you to, you know, bring out, share your experience, what you have learned, what you understand, you know, by your fourth lectures of Dr. Somaloka. And how do you apply that into your practice? Because he, you can see he bringing a lot of psychology and biology into the teaching of Buddhism here. And that's good, because and you bring a lot of science into Buddhism. So it's a really good, it's make the teachings more, clarifies the teachings and the applications. So what do you understand of like the biologies and spiritual, between the biologies, and how is that relate? And he was mentioning about first we have to recognize it, embrace it, accept, not recognize, accept, embrace, and look it deeply. I think that's one of the he was bringing out. And how is that related to the mindfulness teaching? Because you look into the sutra of the mindfulness teaching, all this is in the mindfulness teaching of like recognize, accept, embrace, and looking deeply. Because when we learn, we don't just learn it and forget it. You know? The most benefit is when we're able to put it into the practice, and then we can see the difficulty arise. For example, if you go to school, we learn theory, and then we go into residential, you know, and then to practice, and we see what's the difficulty, and we really experience what we learn, but difficulty arise. Same things here. When we learn all this and we apply, there must be difficulty arise. Because each of us, we experience differently, and how we apply is also different from other people. And because we educate differently, even though we go to the same school, but we educate, I understand differently, even the same matter. That's why it's, you know, it's so everything is blossom, you know, because each of us understand differently, apply differently. But it's good, you know, it's making rich. The teaching is more rich in that way. So it allows you the space and allows you the time to put into applications and see what is the fruits that you got. So you share your experiment.
One of the things, or the biggest thing for me, was to, when he talked about how thinking can lead to judgments,
mm-hmm.
and focusing on, instead of thinking about things, focusing on my body, and for me that's been difficult. Because my body challenges me every day, just physical, just normal day to day, moving from one place to another, and so I've spent many years trying to work with a body that's different than, you know, different. Different than what? Who knows? But if I go to the doctor and say, well, this isn't working, and ask them why, they want to give me a pill and make it go away, and I've always been, come from a place of, no, I don't want a pill to make it go away. I want you to tell me what's going on so I can work with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I always get the old, there's a prescription, get out of my office. And so I've had to spend a lot of time thinking about and researching and studying how does the body operate, and so I can understand how I'm going to work with this body that I have. Which unfortunately led me to a place where I thought, where I spend more time in my head than is healthy, I think. But then I never could figure out, okay, I have to get out of my head, but I can't do it. And he gave me a lot of insight into how to do that. And the breathing exercise that he gave us, counting from 1 to 10, 10 to 1, 1 to 10, I do that a lot now. And it helps me stay out of my head. Or if I'm in my head, it helps me get out of it. And so I don't think so much, and so I find myself not I guess you could call it a judgment to say, well, this is happening because, or this person is behaving this way because. But that, just that little bit is helping me to get out of my head so much. And so I'm not so judgmental. And I can see that it's a process. It's going to take a while. But I feel better each day, so that was one of the biggest things for me. And also to understand his explanation of birth, the biology of birth. I never really thought about all that. You know, that happened a long time ago. That's, you know, that's in the very distant past. And so that helped me to understand the way my mind and my body operate now, and that helped me to understand, that helped me to be able to just let go of it and let it be what it is, instead of constantly trying to figure things out.
Yeah, you can see a little bit on a bit on the mindfulness and the thinking. I think that's very good to look into that. What is the difference between the mindfulness? How is it applied? And what is the thinking?
Yeah, I get in that same trap too. You know, you think you're like, well, I'm thinking about Buddhism, so I must be mindful. And go back to, and I think maybe just Dr. Samulak has said it a couple times. I think someone else said it recently too, that, you know, thinking is the opposite of feeling. So if you're thinking, you're not feeling, and so feeling is being mindful, and thinking isn't. So if you're thinking, you're not being mindful. And I guess it's kind of like an ego thing, you know? We like feel like we're so smart, so if we can think and we're thinking about Buddhism, we're thinking, we're being mindful. But if you go back to thinking is the opposite of feeling, is the opposite of being mindfulness, it's like, oh. So last week when he was doing his summary, in meditation, when I would get distracted, I would go back to, you know, how do I feel? Like his question, you know, how do I feel? And that did help to turn off the brain. So it does, after 5 weeks or so, his talks make sense.
So as you know, now is a lot of people that use mindfulness for therapy, because they see how the mindfulness relates to the feeling to the body. It's many schools, they're doing that. Now, you can look on the internet, bunch a lot of that research and things like how mindfulness can heal the body. And I think it's good to look into that area and see, because now, you know, we just think that all the medicines can heal our body. And then I look into that and see how the medicine can cause a lot of, even though it's healing on the surface, it takes you in the moments. But in the root, you can see the root is not, it's like replacing, you know, cover the, you know, that part, but it's also in that place. But and if we can look into the mouth, see how the mouth, see the roots of that, the problems or the symptoms. Yeah, I'll just let you share.
I had a little different memory of the aspect of the opposite of thinking instead of feeling was another time you said paying attention. So I think about what's the opposite of paying attention, and the opposite of that is thinking. And I wrestled with that quite a bit, you know, what does that all mean? it seems that mindfulness, the term mindfulness seems to be a real big buzzword in Buddhism right now. All the different magazines, all of a sudden there's all sorts of articles about mindfulness. And a couple of years ago I didn't see that word in the magazines, in the articles, and now it's there all the time. So it's, I think buzzwords, after a while they get used so much everybody forgets what they really mean. It's hard to stay focused on what they do mean. And so I enjoyed that aspect of mindfulness, meaning paying attention without thinking. But that's tricky, because the mind likes to think.
Yeah.
That's what it does. The heart beats, you know, the heart pumps blood, the mind thinks. So it's kind of like a muscle that likes to think. So for me, that's been very interesting to think about the aspect of being able to pay attention to something. In Thich Nhat Hanh's talks, he talks a lot about seeing the thing as it is, the thing in itself. To see something as it is without having any thoughts come up from your stored consciousness to affect what you're seeing. And yet that's what the mind likes to do. The mind likes to grab up concepts associated with what you're paying attention to. So that's, I've really enjoyed the way he explained that, and then thinking more about that, and then applying that to other Dharma talks that I listen to. So as I pay attention to what I'm saying, I'm having to think at the same time. but to actually in my meditation, and he talks here about, you know, connecting the understanding the body and the mind and the relationship of the body and the mind and paying attention to the body and the mind without actually thinking. That's quite an exercise. So I'll keep working at that.
You know why that we have a lot of, sometimes we have difficulty with ourselves, but also we have difficulty with other people, and most of the time also because we're not being able being with our body, so that we're projecting that out. You understand what I mean? We have, sometimes we have difficulty being with ourselves, but most of the time we also have difficulty with other people. And because we don't be, not being able to be with ourselves, so we try to recover that, and go outside. project that difficulty outside. So the meditation or the mindfulness is to come back. Come back and be without difficulty. So the word being is very important. We have to not just say that, but being, right? The whole body and mind, being. So when we look, it's interesting when we meditate on the word human being, it has very profound meaning. Today I just look into it, meditate on that. Because when we human being, we have to be have the a ground. See, we have to walk on the ground. But sometimes we are off of the ground. So we are off the ground, and then we are not truly being with ourselves. So the word human being is, it's very interesting when we look in deeply while we meditate and see what is that? What is that human being? Why don't we use other words to describe as a human being? So the mindfulness is like being with the body and the mind. So bring our back, ourselves back to the ground. So in Buddhism, we say that the foundation is like the ground. Here's like the mindfulness. The mindfulness is the ground for everything is to be, for being. So and then the more we think, it's something is like running, and as Dr. Samaka said, like being is like running away more. So and then we look back into our whole histories, and we can see that a lot of astronauts, they do a lot of thinking, right? Look in the lab and do a lot of thinking, and they find something outside from this earth, from other planet. You see, because they do a lot of thinking. They think a lot. So that's why you can see and how it's connect.
I've been struck in the past couple of weeks looking at how I approach when somebody does something that probably has every right to be annoying to the old me. To look into that and having a deeper understanding of the multitude of things they're going through, and even on a very basic level, that their nature, their biological self, that is trying to find a way to express some things. So that insight has given me another tool to step back. When something that starts to get my blood boiling a little bit and kind of look into it, and it's been very helpful of just letting go and not even letting go for the sake of letting go, letting go from a standpoint of being able to look at it and see that there's so much more than I can even comprehend going on at that instant. And a lot of it is not my fault and not their fault. It's us. It's who we are. That's been fun to watch.
I'm gonna kind of add to what you're saying. I was on a homeowners association board for our neighborhood. And you know, you have a lot of different personalities and ideals and different styles of communication and things like that. And at times I would hear people, you know, making comments about, oh, well, this person, you know, didn't get back to me or didn't do this. And but it was mean and kind of insensitive and I find that I've been able to kind of step back from that more instead of, you know, agreeing with that person, because, you know, you really don't know where that other person is coming from or you know, what's going on with their life or, you know, their past experiences and things like that. And just, it is a process to become, I guess, less much less judgmental to the point, you know, where you're really not that way anymore. You know, and another thing is, you know, I stay at home with my three children, and sometimes I find that I get overwhelmed just with the domestic things. And I get resentful, I guess, of my husband or my children of not being, I guess, more helpful, you know, more respectful. And but I think of, and it's hard, but like in really enjoying and being in the moment. Because I know that, you know, I'm going to look back and my kids are going to be, you know, I won't be able to hold them in my lap anymore in not a very long period of time. And it's like, okay, so I have been really working on that, like really trying to be mindful and having individual attention and, you know, just really enjoying the moment instead of always looking into the future, but being in the now.
I don't know about anybody else, but I think one of the hardest things that I struggle with is Dr. Samaroka was talking about mindfulness is about feeling the body. And I tend to get caught by other people's stuff, and it's really hard for me to stay with myself. And when he talked about that, he took me back to a place where I had been 40 years ago, inside my own body. And because other people didn't understand what I was going through, and other people got involved in, you know, especially the people closest to me, you can't behave like that, you can't do that, you can't be like that. I got caught up in that, and I forgot that place. And so when he took me back there, it was like, this is what I've been trying to get back to all these years, that I had I'd forgotten that experience because I got caught in everybody else. I got caught up by everybody else, everybody pushing my buttons, and you trying to live up to other people's expectations instead of saying, hey, this is the way I am, and if you don't like me this way, oh well. And that old habit of getting caught in other people's stuff and other people's button pushing. And so now that he's taken me back there, I can step back and I can look at different people around me and I can say, oh yeah, they're doing this and that's taking me away from this body. And I need to stay here. And but of course, it was easier 40 years ago because I was 40 years younger and I was more in tune with the body I had at the time. But last night on the yesterday on the plumb line meeting, I watched the same thing unfold. I had plumb line, for those of you who don't know, is an online sangha that I moderate. And I have 135 people signed up. And yesterday in the morning, I had 13 people from 7 countries all over the world. And everybody was jockeying for position, trying to make my opinions more important than yours. And somebody sent me a separate message and said, Elaine, you need to do something about this. It's getting out of hand. I said, well, let's just leave it alone and see what happens. And finally, somebody else said, can we just sing a song and he posted a link to one of the Plum Village songs. Mm. And that broke you have to believe what I want you to believe. Mm. The momentum that was coming. And I love doing Plum Line because it reminds me that all over the world people are struggling with the same things. Mm. And it doesn't matter what country or how old they are. Male, female, it doesn't make any difference. We're all struggling with the same things. But I guess my biggest difficulty is not getting caught by other people trying to make me behave the way they think I should behave instead of allowing me the space. Mm. And it seems to be worse with the people I'm closest to than... I mean, I can, you know, a stranger, they say something to me, it's, yeah, whatever. You know, and you walk away, and that's the end of it. But with the people that you're closest to, you know, it's difficult. And so...
I think, to me, the thinking versus feeling goes back to the analogy I used before, which is you have a choice of being right or being happy. And most of the time, we want to be right, and so we express our opinions, even if it's polite and thoughtful. We're still expressing our opinions and hoping that we're going to convince someone else or rationalize ourselves out of it, or someone pisses us off and we have to look for an excuse. And I think the key isn't looking for the excuse or finding the magic answer of why this person is like that, but going back to your feelings. So it's like I can choose to think about this other person and, you know, snowball this effect of they're making me mad, and why are they making me mad? If they could just have this opinion, they wouldn't make me mad. So you have that choice, or you have the choice of, you know, how do I feel? And so if you want to be happy and if you want to be stress-free and not feel that adrenaline, you can just drop all that. And obviously it takes practice, but over time I feel myself not being as defensive. If someone says, you did this wrong or whatever, and it's like, I can know that they're absolutely wrong, they don't know what they're talking about, but I don't defend myself as much anymore. And I think that's kind of a step in the right direction. Mm.
Yeah, just go. I always feel what you say. You know, the more someone, the more we love, the more it's hard, difficult to love, because we expect perfections from the person that we love. So, for example, if you love the teacher and you expect him to be perfect, in my situation, you know, like I have a million expectations. I have expectations for my family, my whole ancestor. When I become monk, they expect me to. In Vietnamese, if you become monk and you disrobe, it's really bad for the whole ancestor. They say that you make lost face for the ancestor. Mm. And they expect you to be always perfect, you know. But as a human, nobody's perfect unless you are Buddha. But the Buddha don't expect any of his disciples to be perfect. He accept whatever they are, but he allow them space and to improve. So there's something that, you know, when we love someone, especially the closest, as you say, is the closest person in our life, is our partner, and next is our children, and we all the time expect them to be perfect. They do some, and then sometimes you don't have space for them to grow, because in order to grow, we have to have the space inside each of us. We need that. So that's why in the teaching of the Buddha, I say that you have to consider your partner as a friend, because your friend, you know, you always have space for them and for themselves and for you also. And so we don't expect much, you know. The less expects we have, the more freedom we have. So, for example, if I was expect for this place to be perfect and I suffer every day, I bet you, the more I just walk out of this trust, this rock is not perfect, I have to fix it, the stair is not right, people come in, you know, And a lot of fear comes inside myself. You know, I have to careful people come here to trip and they sue me and they took the house. You see? And if I just, well, everything is not perfect. And then if I live in that space, then I will be suffered the whole, my whole life. Mm-hmm. See, I say just live with LCE when, you know, come and, you know, people come and work together and we enjoy the community together. And that's perfect already. You know, and then I have the freedom. You know, I have freedom to study. If I have the expectation, I have never have time to study and my practice, because I just walk out, the tree is not trimmed yet, so I need to trim the tree, you know, different ways. So for me, it's the less the expect we have, the more freedom we have. And then the me we have, we're able to let go. We have the capacity to let go. Even your partner, you have to know that. That's why you feel your partner's need. When you expect and you don't feel that, you don't feel what inside then. So someone that is close to you, you have to feel them. They are part of you. You have to know that. Your children or your partner, that is the close to you. But if you expect everything to happen, and then you will be become very suffering. And then how can they breathe in that space? How can you breathe in that space? How can you feel in that space? You feel yourself. It's all you feel is painful all around you. And the children screaming and screaming, you know, my husband don't do anything right for me, you know. And because we expect too much. And you don't know that, you don't allow them the space. So the important to give is to allow them the space. That's the best gift you have. They come home, they occupy from work the whole day. Been like wholehearted, happy in the head. And now you feel that space. How can you feel? How can you imagine that? How do he feel or she feel in that space? And then the more we are drawn that, and the more we try to get away from him. Because you don't feel anything. All you feel is painful, suffering. That's why a lot of divorce is taking place. You don't feel each other. Once you feel your body, that means you feel each other. Space here. So that's why we come back and feel ourselves. Once we feel ourselves, the body, it's pain, you know that there's something else also. Something that close to you also pain. Feel that. And slowly let it go. So if I was to expect all of you to be perfect, and then I would be a suffer. I'm the sufferest person in this place. See, you come here accept as you are. You have something to share, but you also have some pain to share with me. See, but I accept that, and then I'm okay, right? I'm okay. I'm okay. Who you are, you know. Even the children that come and they play, they put the dirt into the fountain. I'm say okay. That's their space. They feel it. And the next morning I have to come out and pour out the water and clean. But I'm feel okay. I say, oh, you know, I feel them. I feel their needs.
Excuse me.
Bless you.
Thank you.
You know, they need the space to play that. See, once I feel that, and I'm okay. I have freedom, whatever they've done. But if you come, you say, oh, you come and tell them kindly. Say, oh, don't do that. You know, that's okay. Like one time the children, you know, one boy, he's very stubborn. You know, one time I write for him, don't turn on the water and spill the water around. But many times he come on the Buddha, you know, on the Buddha birthday. But I was not too happy, and then I said, I got happy. What is the Buddha birthday for me, you know? So we feel that and let it go. And because you understand their needs to play. So you understand your husband or your partner, something, they need something like that. So once we understand that, you feel that, and you're okay. And everything around you. Make it easy space for you. So that's how we feel. We come back. This is the feeling, the things that we feel around us. So the best, the most difficulty we have is with ourselves and with our partner, because we love them so much. They are part of our life, and we want them to be perfect, and want them to be happy, but it. We don't happy, how can we offer the happy to them? We don't go back and feel that. Then how can we offer that? So look into that. See how difficult that is. And the next person we have difficulty with is our children. Most of the time we have, because we have a lot of expectation from them, and we don't allow them the freedom. Even sometimes they struggle, but they struggle to grow. But in order to grow, they have that space there. They have to feel that. You have to feel the needs, and they have to feel you too. So that's why once we return, we have the mindfulness, then we bring into that situation. Then slowly it's lessons, the pain. So I really understand you, but when you say that, I feel that. Because it's part of me. Because a lot of people come here, they have expectations from me, right? But I leave everyone, I have to live with in everyone's expectation. How can I feel? I have no space. See, no space, I cannot smile. But we have to let, you know, also space and smile, and you know, and once we do that, and you know, and everyone come and they feel that. You know? A million things happen into one place. Imagine that you have a just small family, just about at least the most you have might be 5 or 6 people, but the big community like this, and different culture also. And if we come and we have no space for each other, then we will. Millions. Happiness is just 100 times happiness, but a million difficulty will come and go alive. So we have to. But if we're able to let go and have the space, then, you know, things will become easily. So feel that in yourself. So the important is when you feel that, just go back and allow yourself one mindfulness breathing. Lately, I have a lot of things happening in the communities. Many calls after the visit. And I'm okay. Yeah. Even monastic friends call and call. Even one nun just called me before I have a class, but she said she needs to talk to me. I didn't give her a call yet. I said, let me have a lot of space for the class to happen. I know that if she called me, there's something she wants to talk to me, but, you know. So when we know, we feel our body need, because if I talk into that situation, my body's feeling is different, because there's difficult coming, and then my emotions arise, and then I feel will be different. My feeling will be totally different in the class. So I understand, you know. So once we don't deny that we don't have the painful feeling. So that's why recognition is very important. But recognizing alone is not good enough, not have enough capacity. You have to accept it. Once we accept it with our whole hearts, things slowly will be lighting itself. Accepting that. Just accepting by itself already makes something situation light. And then we slowly embrace. And we embrace and we know what to do with that difficulties. And we look deeply so the insights come. So that's why when Dr. Samalika, at the beginning, he was given 4 things. First thing is what? Recognize that you have the problem. We know that we have something inside us, the feeling. So when we recognize it and we accept it, there's some feeling already arise in there. See? Something is there already. And then when we embrace it, we feel it. Embrace here, you live it, we feel it here. Not just embrace, you feel that. What is the pain in yourself? And when we recognize that you have some insight, and the insight is to look deeply. And then you find the way to transform that. That's where the insight is important. So that's 4 components have to come into place to look at, to work together. It's not easy to work with our body, you know that. We always, more of us, we run away from our body. we expect our body to be perfect. But when we take off our clothes, then it's nothing perfect. Mm-hmm. You know, this is lacking something, this is lacking something, you know. And then that's why the reason we have to put on nice clothes is to cover that. You see that? To cover the reality of our body. Mm-hmm. But when we look into it, we go back and we see that, we accept that. We say, it's okay, I'm okay to be like this. Mm-hmm. I'm okay to be short, I'm okay to be like this. And you, when you accept that and you work with it, we see the cause of it, and we work with it. So that we're paying out our tensions, really mindfulness in the body is not a million things, a million difficulties arise when we do that. So that's when we have to go slowly and look into it. You know, every one of us. But without that, there is no insight. You see that. You have to know that, because that is the means for us to work on. You see, that's why the Buddha say, suffering is noble. Suffering is noble, because that's a tool for us to work. That's the tool for us to work in with. Without suffering, what do we work with? You see, don't run away from our difficulties. Just go back and work with it. That's the mean for us to work, you know. That's the mean for us to work. So feelings or other mental formations also is a mean for us to work on, not for us to run away. Buddhism is not something is to run away. Buddhism is to accept the reality and work with reality. Once we work with reality, we embrace the reality. And we embody the realities. That's what Buddhism is. So your body is the reality, right? Your body is a reality, mm-hmm. an object to work with. Without this body, we cannot enlighten. You know, all the Buddha have to come into this world to be enlightened. Even now, the Maitreya Buddha, he's practiced some other place, but now he have to, once here, before he enlightened, he have to come to this world to enlighten. This body to work with. To work with. So run away.
Mark, I have a question about that. When he talked, one of the first things he said was, for most of us, our body is not part of our self-image.
Mm-hmm.
Our self-image is something else. Our mm-hmm. body is not part of our self-image. Mm-hmm. Is part of the goal of the practice to make our body part of our self-image?
Just
I
wasn't
to... really clear on that, or whether... we're skirting that with something else. I just wasn't really clear on that.
Yeah, because once you see your body as a self-image, you're running away. Your body, you see? Self-image is, I mean, you see something that's outside of your body. So the practice is to go back to your body.
Okay.
You see? Mm-hmm. That's the practice to go back. What he means is to go back to your body and work with your body. So, for example, self-image, like you look into the mirror. And the mirror is a mirror, some part of your self-image there. But it's not. It's just outside of your body. So just go back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because when I think of you, I look at you, I see your body, or I see everybody's body. But when mm-hmm. I think of myself,
mm-hmm.
I don't think of my body.
Mm-hmm. See?
And I never thought of that till he pointed that out.
Mm-hmm.
But when I think of everybody else, if I close my eyes and I think of Tai, I think of your body.
Mm-hmm. But you don't think of your body.
But I don't think of my body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's kind of like a little riddle for me. How is that? It means my image of everybody else is totally different than my image of myself.
Right.
So and when we think about it...
there's a split there.
Yeah, there's a split. There's a separation. There's something that's outside. So that's why it's hard to go back. It's hard. Something is to go out is very easy. But to go back to yourself is not... easy, because it's hard for us to accept ourselves, but the reality is to go back and accept ourselves. When we are truly accept ourselves, then you are something. You are in the you are part of enlightened. See, you see the reality because you see part of your body because you are there. Is the you remove the lie of separation. So that's why there's the word unity. See. The word unity is Because once you are with everything, then you become one, unity. There's no longer separation. But you can see this, all of our bodies make up what? Earth, right? Mm-hmm. That's the element, basics. So when we see that, but because we have different body here, doesn't mean that there is in this body different earth or different different objects here, but the same element, make up of earth, water, wind. But because the karma, we create different karma, otherwise it's coming into different beings or different objects here. But once we see that the commonalities, then we remove the separation line.
One thing I've been thinking about what he said is we attach our self-worth to what we have rather than who we are. And I always buy things that I don't need. And sometimes I can go to the mall. After he said that, I didn't buy anything. And then I just moved into my house and I bought something that was really expensive that I guess I don't really need. I'm like, oh, hypocrite, you know? I'm not working on that. But I'm trying not to buy a lot of things I don't need. I'm trying not to attach my self-worth to what I have. Vietnamese people tend to do that, you know? They buy a lot of things to show off. But I never really felt that much. But I'm trying to let go of it even more.
One of the fruits that I've really seen from Samaloka's teaching is compassion. And I think, I didn't realize this until we were just talking now, but learning more about the biology and learning about our bodies and that acceptance that you were talking about, I think makes me feel more compassionate towards myself, and therefore I'm feeling more compassionate towards other people. And realizing, like Melody and Steve were talking about, a lot of times it's not just, you know, someone trying to be mean or saying something that's rude. It's a lot of things that are going on in their lives. And so I just feel, because of what he said and because of a lot of these biological defense mechanisms that we have, ways that we act, that I can be so much more compassionate. Like, I've thought about my father, and specifically, he struggles with so many things. And it's really, now I can see him compassionately instead of thinking like, well, he's never spent time with me because, you know, this. It's more like, wow, he's really afraid of certain things. He's running away. It's, you know, seeing the things that he's doing. So I've just felt, especially towards my family, I felt really compassionate, which it's a big step.
I was thinking what you say about, you know, buying things. And I remember the Buddha story about the farmer losing his cows. And he's running around looking for his cows, and the Buddha said, see how much he suffers because he has those cows, and he's lost them. And so obviously there's not, the cows are okay, there's nothing wrong with the cows, the problem is his attachment to the cows. And so I've kind of felt that, you know, owning things isn't necessarily bad, but being overly attached to them is. Last week I spent a week with my older brother, who I'd say he owns every adult toy known to man. He's got lots of big toys. He owns his own plane and a big boat and a motorcycle and a condo and blah, blah, blah. And I was trying to get a sense of how attached is he to all this stuff. And sometimes I think he's real attached to it, but then other times he'd say something like, I got it. But so maybe he isn't so attached. But that attachment, I think, is where we run into trouble. And so to have a monastery here is great, but if we're overly attached to it, maybe it's not so great. And the same for him, or the same for whatever it is that you've got, you know, maybe it's nice to have that, and you'll enjoy it. Or maybe you're so attached to it and afraid you're going to lose it that you're going to end up hating it. I don't know. But that attachment becomes a problem. And so,
do you think he attaches his self-worth to the fact that he owns all these cool things?
Absolutely. And that's not healthy.
Yeah.
That's not healthy. Yeah. His self-image, and Dr. Samaluk was talking about your self-image is kind of like what you have. So he's got a big self-image. And it shows.
So when we study Buddhism, we can see that thing by itself is not a problem. But the problem is how we look at it, mm-hmm. and how we view it, or how we attach to that. You know, for example, you know, to have a car is like the car by itself is no problem, but how you attach to that is the problem, and that's the problem. So we don't blame when we study. We don't blame on what we have, but how we have it, mm-hmm. and how we use it. That you know, and if you have a car and you can use it and you can share with somebody, you know, and then it's good. You know, mm-hmm. it serves the purpose by itself. You know, the car is there to help us to go somewhere else, and let's share that with somebody. But we see, and when we share and someone uses, we have to use this with the attitude of, you know, grateful and, you know, gratitude to whatever that person have. Don't you see? Yeah. So, for example, if we have the mindset able and you want just to use it for the purpose of meditation, you know, for the healing, then it's good, you know. But if everyone here just come and, you know, damage it, it's not good, you see. By itself, it's nothing. But how we're using it, and that's the problem. You know? So that's why in Buddhism, right view is very important. So when we have the right view, then we see what is the cause of attachment to that. So that's why in the Eightfold Path, right view is first, everything, you know, how you view your husband, you know, how you view your wife, how you view your children is very important. Mm-hmm. So if you have a view of an understanding, then everything's okay, you know. And then you accept your husband as he is and try to, your wife as he is, and, you know, allow him to have some space for himself, for your children, then, you know, the family will be happy. But if you ask your husband, you expect everything to be, you know, have to be on my view, you know, not nobody's view is right, then it will be chaotic in the family, you know. nobody can move around. You know, you have to, you know, say, if I live this here, you have to be here. It's going to move somewhere else. But the children wish to move is somewhere else, and you become, yell around, and look around. then nobody can enjoy the family, you know, in the house. Think about it and, you know, learn and put into the practice. And every day you open your view. You know, open your view. And that means you are on the path. You are improving on your path. So if anyone else has any things to share before we end here. So if not, we will end here, and then so I invite to yourself there, so please just relax.